Professionals spend nearly half the work week on written communication, so focus is important. With Grammarly as your AI writing partner, focus and quickly get through your work with relevant, real-time suggestions. And it works across 500,000 apps and websites, so you can sound more confident and persuasive wherever you write. 93% of professionals report that Grammarly helps them get more work done. Download Grammarly for free at grammarly.com/podcast. That's grammarly.com/podcast.
Shane Lowry, how are you keeping?
I'm good, thanks. Well, I'm as good as I can be.
Golf Weekly, exclusively available on Patreon. Sign up now at otbsports.com/golfweekly.
The OTB Podcast Network.
OTB AM.
With Gillette, we don't just play the game, we change it. Gillette, made of what matters.
Right, Graham Hunter is with us this morning. Graham, good morning to you. How are you?
Yeah, I'm grand. Full of ebullient nonsense, as always.
Well, that's good. What ebullient nonsense can you bring us about Joan Laporta, who obviously is a very important figure in the history of Barcelona, and he's back for another spin at a moment of crisis. The man arrives on his white horse.
You paint a pretty picture, but it's not exactly like that. What a brilliant nonsense do you want about him? Look, there's a massive heady state of euphoria around Camp Nou at the moment, which I'm relatively sure that one way or another PSG will puncture tomorrow night, because Laporta, just to look at him, has changed a little bit in terms of weight, and his face looks a bit more craggy compared to, 18 years ago when he became the president. But his image is instantly redolent of good decisions, good football, and trophies for socios, for fans, or for Barcelona. He won a very significant victory, just about double the next candidate's votes from the members. And it's interesting because this is a guy who represents even maybe more than I said. If you think back to him being a 32-year-old lawyer in 1996 when the president, Nunez, and the vice president, Gaspar, sacked Johan Cruyff with a game left of the 95-6 season. And this young, aggressive, competent lawyer who idolised Cruyff started a protest group. And within 7 years from nothing, he was president. 9 years and 364 days, exactly after Cruyff was sacked, Laporta sat as president of Football Club Barcelona with Johan Cruyff as his right-hand man, winning the European Cup in only their second European Cup in Paris against Arsenal. Around Laporta, things tend to happen. This is a guy who, when he was doing his military service in Tenerife, complained that they were being served camel meat and he was put in solitary confinement, and was still several months of his military service when he was a youngster to go. He decided to bugger off to Egypt with a girlfriend, and found when he came back that he hadn't been reported, he wasn't going to jail, that his companions had yelled out "present" every time there'd been a roll call and the name Laporta had been shouted. This is a guy, genuinely a lightning conductor, a guy who's lived life with veracity and has made, in my opinion, some enormous gaffes. One, when he was president, when he stripped down his underpants in Barcelona airport because the security police and the national police, with whom he has a virulent Catalan who believes in independence, touchy relationship with the national cops. And he kept going through this scanner at the airport, and it kept going off irrespective of the fact he said he had nothing to set the scanner, set the alarm off. He dropped his trousers, stood there in his underpants, going, what do you make of me now? Is there anything you can find that's metallic in it? This is the man that Barcelona have got back, promising great things, promising glory, not promising Erling Haaland, but deep in negotiations to try and get Erling Haaland, pretty much promising that he'll be the guy that keeps Leo Messi at Football Club Barcelona. Maybe not everybody thinks that's the best thing, but the way that Messi's playing right now, the degree to which he's enjoying himself, as a neutral, I can say, I'd rather be watching him and have the chance to interview him or whatever in my backyard rather than, say, in Manchester, Paris. So Laporta comes back, a whirlwind, a Tasmanian devil whirlwind of promises, charisma, mischief, energy. He's a little bit Artful Dodger, a little bit Del Boy, a little bit Barca president for the second time.
5 or 6 weeks ago, we would have said that the season was over in terms of the league, and obviously it looks like their European season is going to end and yet they've gone on a run. The form has come back. The haplessness that surrounded the early part of the Koeman era seems to have been worked through. Some kind of peace has been brokered. You know, you put that together with what's happening off the field. The previous administration get arrested. It's like a Stephen J. Cannell drama from the 80s where everything gets wrapped up and at the end of the season everybody goes home happy.
I can't remember if I've explained this to you, but I think we were talking about Bartomeu something around this time last week, and I went downstairs to find that the guy who controls the looking after, it's called a portero, the looking after our block of flats, said to me, why weren't you outside earlier on today? I said, why? He said, well, the cops and the media were here on the corner, 50 yards away. I said, what for? He said, well, Bartomeu lives here. What? Bartomeu lives on my street, 50 yards away. Turns out because I do not move in the same financial bracket as Jose Maria Bartomeu, I promise you, because he split with his wife, he's got this little pied a terre, and it happens to be at the end of my street. Some news reporter I am. Anyway, look, I really liked what you said about the Koeman era, because it did look hapless. And, you know, it's 16 league games ago in middle December that Juventus came to Camp Nou and absolutely pumped Barcelona. It was a fantastic display of clever, aggressive, punchy football. They trampled all over them and scored good goals. Repelled Barcelona when they had a little bit of resurgence, and it was really, really interesting to watch for a Juventus side that is not going to win the title for once this season, netly where Pirlo is under question, etc., etc. 16 games on after that in the league, they haven't lost; they've only drawn twice. And if you're a Barca fan, the hopes that you dangled there in your intro are true, because they fought back from 2-0 down against Sevilla in the cup in a game where again they were bullied physically. Oh, there's a theme. To win 3-0 in the most dramatic of circumstances at the Camp Nou last week, meaning that they're in the cup final in middle April. Little nota bene, down in La Cartuja, the Olympic Stadium in Sevilla, there'll be last season's cup final on the 3rd of April, which is Real Sociedad against Athletic. And then 14 days later, there'll be this season's cup final, which is Barca against Athletic. Athletic having won the Super Cup already this year. You know, if this change of coach to Marcelino can win Athletic 3 trophies in a year, it'll be the best ever haul. It's extraordinary. More of that in April. But, Barcelona are now, objectively, if you're a neutral, tune in and watch them. It's not Xavi and Iniesta and Neymar and Suarez and Eto. Fine. But it's extraordinary. They're Spain's most entertaining, attractive team to watch play. They're very, very young. They're injury hit. But Koeman has altered between 4-2-3-1, 4-3-3, now 3 at the back, which was completely prohibido, forbidden at Barcelona. Completely. And it's working. And what's more, I'll say again, I said it before, even though he's a little bit tired at the moment, Pedri at 18, is one of the single most exciting, intelligent, unbelievably advanced footballers at 18 I have ever seen. And if you throw in a little bit of Ansu Fati still to come back, Trincao finding his feet, De Jong playing the best football, Griezmann contributing, Brathwaite making runs for Messi, Messi happy, suddenly it's really good to watch. Will they win the title? They're 3 points behind Atleti, having played a game more. Atleti play Athletic tomorrow night when Barca are in Paris. If Atleti win that game in hand, they're surely favourites, but are Barca back in the race, much to my amazement? Yeah, they are. Yeah.
You mentioned, Graham, that Barcelona are in talks to sign Erling Haaland. They're looking to keep Lionel Messi. Can they do both of those things?
I thought not. I won't be Monday morning quarterback and be wise after the event. I thought the answer was, you know, categorically impossible. What I'm assured by somebody involved in the operation, and therefore I have to trust them, and let's see if it comes true, is that Laporta has available to him an enormous credit line, enormous. From, I know the financial institution, they're world famous, which would guarantee them a nine-figure sum. In that instance, they can assuage some of the short-term debt, they will try to lay off some of their short-term debt. They will definitely make the most competitive financial offer possible to Messi, who I think is beginning to incline towards staying for some of the reasons that we mentioned previously. And they can go after Haaland, whether they have enough money to persuade him, whether he wants to be part of a project or go to a club where winning is already a guarantee. That's up to the Norwegian. I don't know what his answer will be. And he's got an agent who I find it hard to respect and trust, but they're after him. They're into the battle. Where they finish up, well, we certainly won't know until May, June. But I think the answer to your question is that they can make a competitive offer to Messi, and they are definitely trying to persuade Haaland. And man, I suppose if you're Haaland, there has to be an attractiveness to play next to Leo Messi, the greatest footballer there's ever been. And if you're Messi, there has to be some degree of attraction in playing next to this unbelievable scoring phenomenon.
You're watching that game tonight, I believe, Graham, Sevilla against Dortmund. What is the emotion you feel before watching Erling Haaland at the moment, knowing that the trajectory is just a vertical line?
Chippiness. I don't always appear on the show, but I'm one of the most chippy there's ever walked on the planet. And when I see him running through challenges, I wish I was there trying to body check and hold him off to see if I could match him. You asked me, and I don't care if everybody's spluttering into their porridge this morning, but that's what I feel. And sometimes when he bullies players, I'm like off my chair, and I wish I could get in there and go chin to chin. He would beat me to a pulp, but that's what I feel. As a neutral observer of football, I struggle to remember watching anybody quite like this. I mean, the guy who, in my era growing up, had a physical presence of this sort was possibly Horst Rubisch, but he was nowhere near the scoring phenomenon that Haaland is. My admiration for him goes up because you talk about him running in a vertical line as if he's just running through, you know, hotshot Hamish and dragging players behind him. My admiration for him has gone up because it's patently clear that he's worked on link play and pressing, the elements that he can add to the natural part of his game. And all my life, I've seen players who are maybe extremely tall or who have a very good shot and they stand out for a reason and they don't work on other things around them. I've seen tall players who don't even work on jumping just because they've been tall enough. To see Haaland at this age with this type of projection, with this type of adoration, with a queue of suitors, which could be telling him subliminally, well, you're already the finished article. To see him going, no, I see precisely where I have to work in my game, what I have to develop to become complete, to become more dominant, to become a better footballer, that engenders as much respect as, you know, I feel awe when I watch him, what he's been given naturally. But we've all been educated to know that footballers who think about their game and work on their game and develop, they're the ones to respect.
Sorry, I'm going to just ask one quick question about this Dortmund team. At some point, maybe in 5 or 6 years' time, we look back at this collection of players and go, it's mad that they weren't a little bit more successful.
I understand that. I wonder if, budget-wise, one of the things across the time that's happened is that Bayern have come in and plundered them. Whatever the adoration that yellow wall at Signal Iduna generates to the footballers, players have repeatedly been able to look elsewhere and go, I might be better suited, or there might be more money, there might be more trophies elsewhere. That's debilitating. I think that if you look at the might, if we were all living in Germany, we were to look at the economic might, cultural might of Bayern Munich, and think about what Dortmund did when they were reaching the European Cup final, winning the title, and going toe-to-toe with Bayern, often for the Pokal and for the Super Cup. I think we would diminish that feeling. Right now, if you look at they're going to be missing Sancho, they're going to be missing Guerrero, they're going to be missing Witzel tonight against Sevilla. Yet, they won away from home. They're decent favourites to go through. I think they will go through. I think Sevilla are a team that could have gone to Signal Iduna and win 2-0. But they look particularly jaded, physically run down, the psychological impact of being 2-0 up against Barcelona and then losing 3-0. All of these things undermine a team that is still in the making, and they need goal power, and they've had injuries at a very poor time, Sevilla. So winning more, yeah, I hear you. Zorc is a guy who, like Monchi, the two sporting directors of the clubs that are involved tonight, it is a guy who knows that Dortmund still have to sell to make ends meet. And that's a key factor. If footballers that you buy or produce understand that there are glittering lights elsewhere and they fancy that, and the club says, yeah, we need to get the books ticking over, then you'll always be in a state of flux. And I think that's the only thing that prevents Dortmund from being legitimate year by year, out and out competitors with Bayern Munich.
Just one final thing, Graham, the Madrid derby on Sunday, you mentioned that Barcelona are going to have a part to play in this title race now. Atletico Madrid really let Real Madrid off the hook, though, didn't they?
Hugely, and I think it was a tiny moment, because all the things that I've been constructively criticising Cholo Simeone for, and you know, to follow my argument, now you have to accept that maybe I was right. Some people won't, but he's been far too conservative. He's picked teams badly. He's made substitutions badly. He's looked like a nervous man, Cholo Simeone. He's looked like somebody who's like, oh, we're doing not too badly, we'll just try and hold on to it. He didn't do that at the weekend. Atleti played very, very well, in my opinion, in terms of quality of play first half, particularly via Trippier and Llorente. And then in terms of the actual quality of chances second half, although Real Madrid really woke up, it still should have been Atleti's game. He makes good subs, Simeone, in this match, except he leaves Suarez on. Suarez is a bit knackered. At 1-0 up with 4 or 5 minutes left, they have a break. Suarez pulls it down. It's 1v1. Saul is catching up to make it 2v1. And Suarez fluffs the pass into space. That means that Saul either scores or Real Madrid have to go chasing him into the corner. And Suarez fluffs the pass because he's knackered. At that point, Real Madrid literally pick it up, run the length of the park, a lovely 1-2 between Benzema and Casemiro, and Benzema scores. And they're off that hook. Like you said, one, he should have changed Suarez for Dembele. Dembele's not been given a proper chance. It was an obvious move. Cholo didn't do it. Little details took me up. Two, it's what Madrid always do. Both of you are maybe more committed to what's happening in the Premier League, because that's your bread and butter. You watch enough European football and La Liga to understand that's Real Madrid's calling card. If we know that, why didn't Cholo Simeone?
It's going to be interesting to see exactly what happens over the next few weeks and how their European form feeds into what happens in La Liga as well. Graham, great to have you with us this morning. Enjoy tonight's games. Cheers.
You too, lads.
OTB AM.
With Gillette, we don't just play the game, we change it. Gillette, made of what matters. That was an OTB Podcast Network presentation.